Well, this hour, as we continue chatting with Dr. Lori Nadel, we will take your calls. Precognitive Dreams, ESP, jump on board. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Dr. Lori Nadel. Lori, we were talking about lucid dreaming, and that is, of course, a dream that you know you're in a dream, but in many cases, they're not lucid dreams at all, are they?
No, they're not. I'll give you an example of one series of dreams that I had 6 months before Hurricane Sandy, which, of course, we didn't know was coming, and they weren't lucid dreams for me. But they were very interesting, and they bring up another point, which is that especially now when things are so unstable, you know, a lot of psychics and mystics have said this, the veil between the physical world and the spirit world becomes very thin. So it was May in 2012, and I had a dream that my dad, who he passed in 1989, he came to me in a dream, and he said, Lori, you need to buy water. He said, there's going to be a crisis, and you're going to need more water. So in the dream, I said, okay, Dad. I think I wrote down the dream when I woke, but I wasn't lucid in the dream. And I bought a few gallons of water and stuck them in the attic. And then around 4th of July, my Uncle Nick showed up in a dream, and he said, your father's upset with you because you're not taking this seriously. You really need more water. So I went, okay. And I figured, well, he went to all this trouble to contact me from the spirit world. And I go out and I buy a few more gallons of water, at which point my friends were laughing at me. They said, what are you doing with all this water? I said, well, I don't know. I had a dream. My dad came. My uncle came. And then on Labor Day, my father showed up again. And this time he was wearing his white coat because he'd been a dentist. And he was very stern with me. And he said, you don't have enough water. There's going to be an emergency. And so I stocked up. I had about 13 gallons of water in my attic when Hurricane Sandy struck Long Island in October of 2012. And there was 4 feet of water in my little beach cottage. And the town sewer pump broke during the storm surge. And all of the water supply was contaminated and toxic. And I was the only one on the block who had water, extra water, wow, until FEMA showed up a few days later. And the American Red Cross showed up with water. And I was able to share water with my neighbors. And it was because I had had this series of dreams in which basically the supernatural presence or the guidance or the spirits from the other side, in this case family members, had come to advise me and coach me that I needed to get prepared. And I think that people, that these kinds of dreams, these, for want of a better word, these spiritual dreams or these dreams from the other side or the presence of supernatural phenomenon are more heightened, and the more people report them prior to these kinds of life-shattering events.
And our dream state is a very wonderful, powerful mechanism to get things accomplished, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Again, you know, we had the story of Elias Howe. There was Kekulé, who was the father of organic chemistry, and he had tried for 18 years to come up with the structure of the benzene molecule with mathematical formula, and he failed consistently until one night he had a dream of a snake eating its tail. And in the dream, he became lucid, and he recognized that the snake eating its tail was the structure of the molecule that had been eluding him in his waking life. And he woke up and he drew the diagram, and the rest of his career he spent going around to scientific conferences. And this was in the, I think, late 1700s, early 1800s. And his message to scientists was, gentlemen, you must learn to trust your dreams.
Interesting fact. Lori, that's fantastic. And let me tell you, since you've been doing this, have you kind of evolved yourself from being a psychotherapist?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know what to call myself at this point. A lot of what I do is help people to tap in and develop their own sixth sense. I taught courses in intuitive leadership, and we used to call it high performance thinking. I had corporate clients, Eli Lilly, the American Management Association. I used to teach workshops, and there's nothing like teaching in person, but of course now everything is on Zoom. And I do work with people one-on-one to help them develop their own abilities. I know that I'm very much aware that we can program our dreams, and often, you know, when people are going through transitions, I'll give them a very simple exercise where we can contact our dreaming mind. And it's so simple and elegant. Just write a note and put it under your pillow. You say, "Dear dreaming mind, please send me a dream that can help me understand and whatever the issue or conflict or problem or relationship is." And then you put that that note under your pillow. And usually within 2 to 3 nights, you will have that breakthrough dream, or you will wake up with a feeling that somehow or other the conflict or issue has been resolved. So it's very, very simple, and many people have lucid dreams after they do this. So we can program our dreams, and that's also part of what I do with people, is to do really deep dream work in terms of helping people to get to the core of an issue or to develop a map for their next phase of their life or their career.
Years ago, when I was applying for initial jobs, I would concentrate on the person who did the hiring, and I'd go to sleep thinking about that person. And sure enough, within a day or two, that person would end up calling me, offering me the job.
That's fantastic. You know, it reminds me, I know you've had Dr. Larry Dossey on the show, and he wrote a book about, I think, intuition. I forget what it was called. And he told me a story that when he was a resident, young doctor, he had dreamt about a patient that he had never met before, and he dreamt all of the results of that patient's tests. And then a few days later, this patient he had dreamt about, who he never met, walked into his practice, and all of the blood work, all of the lab work and tests that he had dreamt about, those that were the exact accurate results of this person's actual lab results. And that completely transformed the way he practiced medicine.
Wasn't there a movie where the government had somebody enter somebody's dream to assassinate them and kill them? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that. So it wasn't the Manchurian Candidate.
No, it wasn't
but,
that.
No, but that does sound like a great movie. Please let me know if you remember the title. I'd love to see that.
How do we know that people who die in their sleep aren't murdered by people?
Well, you know, now that you're bringing it up, there are a lot of things that we don't know, and there are also, I think there are also practices that a lot of psychics learn how to do to protect themselves before they go to sleep, because just as we are able to pick up impressions from, if we think about our sixth sense as like a satellite dish that can pick up impressions from other people, from other people's minds or the unconscious or the collective unconscious or supernatural, or in my case, from spiritual intelligences, it is quite possible that we're also vulnerable to, for want of a better word, intentions of those who don't have our highest interest at heart and who may, in fact, wish us harm. So one of the ways, the simple way, is, of course, before you go to sleep, is to imagine yourself kind of in a cocoon of shiny white silver light. And you say a prayer and ask to be protected when you sleep. It is something, it's kind of a mental martial arts technique, and a number of psychics have told me over the years that they do that every night.
Let's go to the phones. Let's start by going to Bill in Los Angeles to get us started. Hi, Bill.
Lori, as a former reporter myself, Columbia J School, 86, I was kind of interested that you mentioned this chemist Kekulé. You're the only other person I've heard familiar with that story. But for the record, the source that I read about him in, I don't have a computer, I'm doing it by memory, he was staring into a fire when he came up with his chemical solution for the molecule he was looking at. It, to my knowledge, it was not a dream. but that's just kind of a minor thing. My main concern is something you said about not letting logic talk you out of what your sixth sense is saying. And I would argue that the sixth sense may be a good supplement to logic, but I would go with Aristotle, who said nobody ever broke logic, but that logic didn't break him first.
Well, I think we need both, and this is why I know when I did corporate trainings, I mean, we did high-performance thinking, learning how to use logic and intuition. Carl Jung said that intuition, or the sixth sense, is a way that we take in information about the world, and then we organize that information using primarily our logic, what he called the thinking function, and or our emotional intelligence or the feeling function. So, but sometimes, you know, our sixth sense, and I've interviewed in my book, Sixth Sense, Unlocking Your Ultimate Mind Power, I've interviewed first responders and veterans and people who said that it was that split second of inner knowing, they didn't know where it came from, that actually saved their life. So, yes, theoretically, yeah, we need both in order to lead a balanced life. I would totally agree with you. But sometimes you get that sudden flash of knowing, and it's part of your survival network of intelligences.
I think the name of that movie I was mentioning is called Inception, came out in 2010.
Oh, yeah. Inception was gorgeous. That was a great movie. Yeah.
Stealing secrets and things, entering people's brains and their dreams. Uh-huh. Is that possible?
I think it is possible. I hope it never happens to anybody listening, but I do think it is possible, just as we can receive messages from spiritual beings, from angels, from guides, from power animals, and from loved ones on the other side.
Let's go to Brendan in Austin, Texas, one of our favorite towns. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, Brendan.
Hey, thanks, George and Dr. Nadell.
Sure thing.
Inception was a really good movie. I really like that movie. That was a big inspiration for me to get into lucid dreaming. But real quick, I have two questions. And my first question is, what is the prevalence with ADHD and people with ESP? And my second question is, how do people with chronic anxiety, like generalized anxiety or PTSD, how can they be helped by ESP? Thank you.
Okay, let's take anxiety first, if we can, Lori.
There's a very interesting relationship between intuition and anxiety, and a number of studies show that intuitive people tend to have more anxiety than people who are more, let's say, pragmatic, or we call them sensing people, you know, people who are more concrete in their thinking. And Carl Jung said that intuition is the ability to see around the corner. And when we have anxiety, we're going around the corner, and we're creating a movie of something that hasn't happened yet. And we're actually in the movie, and we're looking at this horrible thing that hasn't happened yet. And it's so compelling that the whole body believes that it's already happened. And I always say that creative people have more anxiety, and people who are kind of less creative or, you know, less visionary have less anxiety. So I think there's definitely a relationship between anxiety and intuition, and intuitive people very often will come in for help in learning how to tell the difference between anxiety and intuition. In terms of ADHD and autism, I don't have any knowledge of that, so I'm sorry.
What about savants? Do they tend to pick this up a little quicker than people who aren't?
Well, it depends on what kind of savant they are. You know, as we go back to, say, Rain Man, that movie with Dustin Hoffman,
yeah.
A lot of savants have, like, eidetic imagery. In other words, they have perfect recall of, like sequences of numbers, for example. But then there are also savants who are brilliant inventors. And I think anything that involves design, research and design, anything that involves, a breakthrough in terms of a new composition or a work of art, anything that hasn't been done before, that kind of savant is definitely working with intuitive intelligence.
Let's go to Roger, driving near Chicago. Hello, Raj. Go ahead.
Hey, Roger.
Rod, still with us? Nope, he's not there. Let's try Joe, Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, I have a couple of questions. First, meditation and then dreams. On the meditation, sometimes you can nod off while you're doing that and have a dream. That maybe that has more significance. But even if you don't fall asleep, I'm wondering if there is overlap on precognitive material between meditation and dreams, possibly, or that you could derive precognitive information just out of a meditation alone. And then on the dreams, a couple of things I'm thinking about. One is some dreams seem to be plausible to you, where it seems reality-based, except there's an element or two that's introduced that seems not plausible. And then, you know, sometimes you have strangers that might have a characterization that you share with them, but also sometimes strangers are in the distance or in close proximity. I'm wondering if that's something significant. And then you got the annoying recurring dream that George has mentioned he had about his studies.
And your question is?
Just about the demonstration aspects of a dream, where it seems to be demonstrating something about you or about a situation that otherwise just you couldn't really choreograph consciously.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. You know, our dreams are helping us to work through, issues and conflicts and relationships. But when I do dream work with people, we work on the model that says that every symbol in the dream represents a part of yourself. And so, when we dream about strangers, whether they're close to us or far away, they would represent aspects of ourselves that we're not in touch with during our waking life, and the dream is bringing them to our attention. That's why it can be very helpful if you have recurring dreams to kind of not necessarily write down the whole dream, but write down two or three key words when you wake up, or if you wake up in the middle of the night, you know, jot down a few key words, and you'll notice if you're dreaming, if you're having recurring dreams about specific types of strangers, for example, or specific types of people, maybe angry people or happy people, or people riding bicycles, for example, or cats who turn into people. All of these represent aspects of ourselves that we can get to know through doing some active dream interpretation.
And the big question, Lori, is how does it work? How does precognitive dreams work? Think about that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about that. Dr. Lori Nadell with us, her website. Lori, spell out your website for folks.
Thank you. My website is Lori, L-A-U-R-I-E, Nadell, N for Nancy, A-D-E-L. So it's my name, LoriNadell.com.
And the books you can get on Amazon?
The books are available on Amazon. Also, they're audio books. We have Dr. Lori Nadell's Sixth Sense, Unlocking Your Ultimate Mind Power. And the Audible book is narrated by SAG actor David Stiefel, who is one of Audible's primary producers of books. And it's like having your own private Sixth Sense workshop, because he talks you through each of these exercises.
Yeah, he is very, very, very good. Lori, we're going to come back and take final calls next. And we'll be back with final calls with Dr. Lori Nadell in just a moment as we talk about ESP, precognition, and dreams. On our next Coast to Coast program, Robert Young Pelton joins us to talk about these world events that we're going through, and they're changing every other day. And Dr. Bruce Goldberg joins us to talk about some dreams and reincarnation. So make sure you're part of the program. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Dr. Lori Nadell. Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lori, we were talking about what creates these abilities to do what we do. What are we tapping into? Is it God-given or something else?
Well, I think it's God-given. I mean, I think it's also, I think it's intergenerational. I think, sometimes it definitely runs in families. if we look at cultures around the world, very often, you know, somebody will, as a child, they'll start having precognitive dreams, or as I said, you know, making predictions that come true, or seeing spirits or seeing angels. And then they will be taken to an aunt, or they'll be told that their grandmother or grandfather had this ability. So, you know, the question of where does our DNA come from? I think that's a kind of fundamental question. We don't really know. I think, you know, we are God's creatures.
Indeed we are. To the phones we go. Joe in Monterey, California. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Thank you for the call, George.
Thank you, sir.
I like the show. I had two experiences that I'd like to talk about. I had them a few times, but they're unusual. In class, reading a book, they asked me to read a paragraph from the book. And I read the book, read the paragraph, and it wasn't in the book. It was the facilitator said, well, that's on the astral plane. So he asked me to read it again, the same paragraph, and I read it. And he said, well, that's on the causal plane. And he asked me a third time, and I read it again. And he says, that's on a world much higher than that. Okay, that happens once in a while. Another experience, I was doing a show on WOR, a 15-minute tape show, with a friend. And we were talking between tapes. And we started to talk about extraterrestrials, traveling in spaceships and asteroids and stuff, and cults. That day, at that time, that day, in California, and I'm in New York, in California, that's when that cult killed themselves. They were.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I was working in the newsroom.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember
and
that one.
The last one. Sometimes I do astral travel, of course, in the dream state, and I meet people that I know, and they say, and they misvalidate it because they tell me, oh, I do that on the astral plane. So is it possible to be in someone else's dream? Yes, that's possible.
It is possible. In fact, I have spoken to a medicine woman from the Seneca Native American Federation years ago, and she said that the Senecas have these dream councils where every Monday night they will all dream together about an area or a chamber or a campfire. I think it was a lodge, actually, where they would all meet in the astral plane or in the dream plane, and they would talk about issues related to the community, and they would solve problems together in their dreams, and then they would talk about it in a waking meeting in their local council lodge. So, yes, it's definitely possible, and it does happen, although it's unusual.
Let's go to Mike, Denver, Colorado. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, George. Great to be with you again. How are you?
I'm great. I hope you are, too.
I'm doing outstanding. Thank you. And, Lori, thank you so much for your presentation this evening. And I just had a quick comment and question. So, Lori, when we talk about self-observation, you know, this is a really important skill to have. And, you know, it's essentially the ability to hit pause, you know, take a moment to evaluate yourself and kind of take account of where you're at in the moment and, you know, kind of applying this to anxiety because, you know, anxiety is something I've struggled with for all my life. I'm 25 now and, you know, I've learned that, you know, essentially asking, are you in control of the emotion you're experiencing or is the emotion controlling you is a huge key to kind of understanding and overcoming the anxiety. But my question, Lori, surrounding this is how much of developing, you know, intuition is really mastering self-observation?
You know, that's a good question. I cultivating, you know, mindfulness and self-observation is obviously it's a useful skill for many different life situations, but intuition is not it is really not about observing yourself having the experience. It's about allowing the experience to unfold. So and then later you can observe and learn from whatever it was that you saw or you heard or you felt. So it's probably along a similar spectrum of consciousness, but not identical mind skills. But thank you.
Lori, and since you've been doing this, when you first started after your news business, did you come across anything that just blew your mind as a psychotherapist?
Well, I think, you know, again, the main thing that constantly blows my mind is the power of dreams to awaken us, and the level of presence of spiritual insights and breakthroughs. And as I said, the ability to transcend the physical and to tap into higher levels of connection with the unseen world. It's endlessly fascinating.
Let's go to Joseph in the state of Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, good evening. A terrific show. Really appreciate it.
I'm up
on the Olympic Peninsula, George, right across the water from where you do your Everett show.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I am 72 years old. When I was 22 years old, I was really troubled young man trying to figure out what was going to happen in life. Would I ever have children? Would I ever be married? And one evening, I had a very vivid dream of seeing three young boys, 7 years old, 6 years old, and 5 years old, just standing looking at me in this very colorful and very vivid dream. So I pondered that the next day and really wondered, how does that relate to my wondering, will I ever meet my bride? A week later, I was in a old farm cabin looking out in bed with the full moon coming through the window. And I was alone, and I was still very troubled, wondering if I would ever have a woman who was really, truly my wife. So what occurred was I was asleep, struggling in some dreams, and I suddenly woke up paralyzed. I was totally paralyzed. And looking to my right ever so slightly, there was a woman standing in the room, no more than 4 feet from me, with her back to the window and the moonlight illuminating her from the back with her hair and her body, and she was just standing there looking at me. And I became fearful because this person was really in the room. So what happened was she walked up to me, and I'm trying to understand what was happening. I was totally awake, but still paralyzed. Her head came off her body, and it split into two different heads, identical. One went to my left ear, and one went to my right ear. And both heads turned simultaneously into my ears and whispered to myself, saying, "There's nothing to be afraid of, Joe. There's nothing to be afraid of. You're going to be okay." And she vanished. And when she vanished, I was still paralyzed. And I looked, and a large butterfly came up out of my chest and hovered over me, totally aglow, and turned and flew through the wall and disappeared, and I was free from being paralyzed, and I was awake for the rest of the night wondering, who was that? What was that? I don't understand that. I had never experienced that before. Fast forward 1 year later, and I met this young lady, and I invited her to a Christmas party where I lived, way out in the country, in Oregon, on the coastal area, in the mountains. And she came. I introduced her to people from the local farm area. And I was getting kind of nervous and introducing her, and a lot of people looking at us because there were some other people in the valley who thought that someday they would be my wife. But I wasn't looking. I wasn't searching for that. she said, let's go for a walk. We walked over. We crossed the bridge over the stream, over to the goat barn. It was a full moon, and I sat on a log, and she stood in front of me with her back to the full moon, lighting her hair up just like it was the year before. And she whispered to me, now, I never shared this with her. I never shared it basically with just about anybody. I kept that whole event to myself. And she whispered to me, there's nothing to be afraid of, Joe.
How about that?
There's nothing to be afraid of.
That was a classic precognitive dream, Lori.
Right. Absolutely. That was a classic dream. And that's really wonderful that you had that experience. And it, you know, kind of, again, demonstrates that what I was saying before, that the veil between the, you know, physical world of the linear three dimensions that we think of as reality is actually just like a layer of reality, and that there are many multiple layers of reality and dimensions that we can experience when we dream.
Let's go to our first-time caller, John in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Wonderful to talk to you. I've been listening for 22 years.
Well, thank you, sir, for your support.
And, love the program. My question slash comment today is, I developed an extreme anxiety disorder as well as post-traumatic stress disorder a little over 10 years ago. And since then, all of my dreams, and I mean all of them, involve all the dead people who have been in my life. My mother and my father. I was a musician, bandmates, light men, sound men. They're all dead now. I'm the last remaining one at 62 years old. I have no one but my wife. We've been married for 40 years. And every time I dream, I have dreams of my friends and family, and we're all having a wonderful time. I see a psychologist on a regular basis once every week or twice a month. And he tells me I should look at those as happy visits.
Does it make you feel better?
Yes, because all of the dreams with my family or my dead friends, and I'm talking about 15 or 20 people, including my mother and father who died in 99 and 2020. They're always fabulous. My dreams are, we're laughing, we're having wonderful times, doing great things that we always did together. And I wake up and I feel like it's almost as if, are they trying to tell me, come over to this side, it's better over here? My health is bad. There's a lot of bad things going on in life. And yeah, I have all these dreams with these wonderful people who are all dead.
We got a minute to go here, Lori. Give them a little response on that. What do you think?
All right. Well, you know, I think, you know, your dreams are reassuring you. And, you know, maybe your loved ones are coming back from the other side to reassure you. Or your subconscious is reassuring you that you have had wonderful relationships and these are a source of strength and comfort to you. But you're very fortunate because your unconscious is trying to help to support you. I'm sorry that you have PTSD, but you also have this tremendous strength within you, and you're stronger than you know.
Boy, if he lived out your way, he'd be a classic person to visit you, wouldn't he?
I guess so. I guess so.
Lori, we are out of time. Keep in touch. What's your next project? What's up?
Well, I'm still working with COVID patients, long-haul COVID patients, and getting ready to rewrite my play about living after a solar storm destroys the grid. I know we were talking about that a few years ago, and now it's looking like more and more it might be becoming a reality. They are calling it a solar tsunami.
That's very possible. Lori, thanks again. Always great talking to you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.